From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Going to break format just a little bit this hour. Before we get to the main conversation for the hour, I want to talk for just a few minutes about what the Supreme Court's decision means for New York State. And the obvious answer you may be thinking as we go throughout the morning, we've heard about the Supreme Court ruling 6-3 in favor of the Obama administration regarding the Affordable Care Act. The obvious answer you would think is it means not a whole lot for New York State. But what we want to do is sort of get our head around what this does mean going forward, and no one has covered this issue quite like our Michelle Faust, WXXI reporter who has worked so hard on Affordable Care Act stories and coverage, and she's actually out of town but on the line with us now, and it's nice to have you on the phone. Michelle, how are you?
I'm doing well. Good to talk to you, Evan.
Well, we talked on this program in recent weeks as we got ready for this decision about the fact that if this had gone the other way, Michelle, what would possibly have changed around the country, but also for us? And I guess the answer for us would be that New York State was not going to be affected like some other states would have?
That's right. So the answer is that New York would not change much. I mean, as you mentioned, and as it's mentioned in probably every newscast today, in the decision, King v. Burwell, Chief Justice Roberts wrote for the majority 6-3, and they basically said they're going to uphold the subsidies. And the big question here was, could people get subsidies if they had the wording in the Affordable Care Act is through an exchange established by the state? There are 14 states with their own health care marketplaces. New York is one of them, but there's 36 states without their own exchanges. Those people get their health care through the federal marketplace, and the question was, could they continue to get the tax credits that were helping them pay for their insurance? This was going to affect many people. 85% of Americans receive subsidies to help them pay for their insurance premiums. It would have affected 6 million people. And really the idea was that it would create havoc on the insurance markets, because if people lost their subsidies, could they continue to afford to pay for their insurance? And if people dropped out, the only people who would stay on their insurance would be people who had serious health conditions. They are the most expensive people. The whole point of the Affordable Care Act is if everyone buys in, it'll be affordable for everyone. But if the most expensive, the most sick people stay on, then it'll become more expensive and it just is untenable. So they were looking at this as, the word that was being thrown around was death spiral. But again, this was a situation for the 36 states without exchanges. New York was not one of those states. And it looks like the New York State exchange was not going to be touched, regardless of the decision in this case.
Right. And so one of the ideas that I heard before this decision was, if it goes against the Obama administration, then perhaps the uncertainty and the problems with those other 34 states that don't have their own exchanges, maybe the entire system would collapse and impact the other states like New York that did have their own exchange. Now that there's no uncertainty anymore, now that the decision has been made, Michelle, does this mean that states like New York, and frankly every state, exchange or not, can kind of move forward without a cloud of uncertainty regarding Obamacare, that things will be a little more stable in any way?
For the most part, I mean, this is not the first challenge to the Affordable Care Act, and there are other legal battles in the courts continuing. You'll remember that in June 2012, the first challenge that went to the Supreme Court was a challenge against the individual mandate. That's the rule that Yep. everyone has to have insurance. And again, this was, even though he's a conservative member, Chief Justice Roberts also ruled and swayed the court to uphold the first challenge with the individual mandate. He did it again with this question of subsidies. And I think it was really interesting. One of the things that he's quoted here saying, I want to read this right here. It says, Congress passed the Affordable Care Act to improve health insurance markets, not destroy them. If at all possible, we must interpret the act in a way that is consistent with the former and avoids the latter. So I think that's a pretty strong support that we can see that Chief Justice Roberts is very in favor of the Affordable Care Act. And, you know, the dissenters, like we heard in the newscast at the top of the hour, the dissenters are Antonin Scalia, Clarence Thomas, Samuel Alito, and they're not quite happy about that. They're saying that this is showing we're changing Obamacare into SCOTUS care.
That was quite a snarky line, yeah.
Very interesting line. But the other thing is, you know, I spoke to many people who are very knowledgeable on this, and they said this is an issue of the market. Now, we're talking about insurance marketplaces. This is a market question, because how many businesses would have been affected if, you know, 9 million newly insured people lost their insurance? If all of the people who newly bought insurance are paying their premiums, may or may not be using their insurance, that's a lot of money that's being moved around in the marketplaces. A lot of insurance companies, they're making more money. They're having a lot more investments into their businesses. So what kind of business loss would there have been if people had pulled out en masse? Now, the 2.1 million new enrollees in the New York State of Health marketplace, again, wouldn't have been affected, at least not immediately. But, you know, any kind of chink in the armor for Obamacare, as many people have said, could be a bad thing for everyone.
Before I let you go, Michelle, when we have talked about challenges, this was viewed as the big one because it got to the Supreme Court. So this was the second time the Supreme Court has had a chance to evaluate the Affordable Care Act in some regard. It wasn't the only challenge. There have been dozens of attempts at legal challenges at various levels here. But with this now done, is it fair to say that the only way to kind of pull back the Affordable Care Act now would be legislatively? Is it highly unlikely that the Supreme Court would have the appetite to tackle this in any other way that you have seen?
You know, I don't want to speculate too much on that, but this is a very big win for the Obama administration and supporters of the Affordable Care Act. So, I mean, it looks like this is a law that's here to stay. Legislatively, it's left to be seen what would happen. There are people who are running right now for president who say they will, if they win, get rid of the ACA. That may or may not happen, and it's only left to be seen.
All right. Michelle Faust has done such great work for us on the Affordable Care Act and related health coverage stories. Thanks for taking the time for our program this afternoon, and I'll see you soon.
Thank you.
Michelle Faust on the line with us. And let's shift our attention now. Our next connection this hour is going to be made this coming Monday, June 29th. In the city of Rochester, the newest series of Clergy on Patrol events will begin. The city launched Clergy on Patrol as a way to build a stronger relationship between the community and the Rochester Police Department. And so just like last year, you will see Rochester Police, local clergy, and kids walking together on Monday, concluding at the Avenue D R Center for some events. And this hour, we're talking about how to improve police-community relations, whether Clergy on Patrol is an effective tool, and what it means outside of just seeing people walking together. My guests include Tracy Miller from the city of Rochester. Nice to have you, Tracy.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
David D. Will Williams is the CEO and co-founder of MOG. And D. Will, what does MOG stand for?
The Man of God Movement.
Man of God Movement. We'll talk to you in a minute about what that is. Nice to have you here.
It's an honor.
Commander Joseph Morabito from the Rochester Police Department is here. Commander, nice to have you.
Thank you.
And Ray Mayolis from Pathways to Peace. Well, Ray is the manager of Youth Outreach and Violence Prevention for the city of Rochester. Nice to have you, Ray.
Thank you, Evan.
Tracy, I want to start with you. This is a program now that you really got started last fall. It doesn't necessarily start or end, I guess.
Correct.
I mean, police community relations and building those relationships is an ongoing effort. But with this relaunch on Monday, what is the specific goal here?
The goal is, just like you stated, it's to continue building the bridge between the RPD and the residents of the community, to get them familiar with each other and allow them the space to engage with each other in a less formal atmosphere, if you will, just allowing the children in particular to see the officers as being more than a uniform, and knowing that it's an individual with feelings behind the uniform who wants to be a part of the community and do their job effectively. And we found that it's been an excellent outreach to engage with the community.
Commander, when you are on patrol, clergy on patrol, you're walking, you're stopping to chat with people, it's not going to fix every problem, but what are some of the kind of moments that you have seen starting last fall when this program really started?
I think one of the big moments for me was the ease at which we put our group together, and the ease of we move through the community, and it opened some folks that may not be willing to come up and speak with us right off the bat. Once we're walking with the clergy and they understand why we're out there, kind of broke the ice a bit. And you know, this is one of the things we do to reach out to the community. We do many other things, but we realize the faith-based community is a huge asset for us to reach out to folks, because we know that their congregations are large. We have great relationships. We can rely on them to do many things for us as community members. Just bringing people together, sometimes that's critical just in getting our message out.
Well, I want to talk to D. Will. David Williams, the CEO and co-founder of the Man of God Movement. What is MOG? Tell me about that.
Well, MOG started late 2011 when I decided to be a man of action more than just a man of words, because we all know that talk is cheap, you know. A minister could be in a church all day saying what needs to be done on the outside of the church, but if they never take initiative, nothing would ever happen. The leader will also lead the others that are in that flock to do the same, just be people of talk. So I took it upon myself, and I felt like it was I had an impression from God, you know, just to move with obedience. And since 2011, me and a bunch of guys, the Man of God Movement was started to cause unity within the body of Christ. Because when you look at churches, they're divided by denominations or generations when it comes to ages, even races. So when it started, it was just a whole bunch of young dudes like myself that come from different churches that just decided, yo, let's come together and let's work our way into the streets and infect the streets with the love of Christ, you know?
How's it going?
It's going great. It's going real good. It's going to the point. We have this program called Hood Prayer. It's an acronym from Hand of Our Deliverer, where we go out into where the drug dealers are. So, like, ever since 2011, my part of Hood Prayer, my section, is Hawley and Genesee and Thurston and Milton. We've been there ever since 2011. And it comes to the point that if we don't come out, like, say I go out of town when I'm on tour and we don't come out, I get phone calls like, yo, where you at? Where you at? So we've noticed that these people want this. They need it. And it's where I'm from. I'm from the streets. And since I changed my life, I've came back to it. And also, it also helps, like, now that there's clergy on patrol, because I've had tons of running with the police, especially when it comes to Hood Prayer. So now they expect us to be out there. So it's a great part of what's happening in the community.
All right. So when you're not there and they want to know where you are and they want you there, again, when you do go to those neighborhoods, to mm-hmm. those areas, how long are you there? What are you doing?
I'm there for a whole hour. I believe that as me as a Christian, I have to move like Christ. You know, I gotta get my feet and my hands dirty. And it's not about going out and Bible bashing people and telling people that you need to get your life right. Nah, Jesus, he did life with people. You know what I'm saying? With people who you expected him not to do life with. So you know what? While you selling drugs and while you smoking your weed, I'm gonna chill up right here with you. I'm gonna chill right here with you. And anything you want to talk about, we could talk about that. And right before I leave, we're gonna pray. You know, we're going to pray over your circumstances. We're going to pray over your situation. We're going to pray over your family. We're going to pray that your life gets shaped out the way that we believe that, you know, it's destined to be.
Now, someone is selling drugs and you're going to kind of roll up next to them and just talk.
Yeah.
Just talk like two people.
Yeah.
Not lecture them. You know, not tell them, you know, I mean, they may tell you, though, to get out of there, right? They may say, no?
Nah.
No?
Yeah, when I say I'm from the streets, like, these people already know who I am. They know exactly who I am. They know exactly what, because the things I used to do was way worse than what they are doing now. So now, it's a thing like this. Like, if I see someone who came from where I came from and they're doing way better in life, I think I want to take advice from this guy. You know what I'm saying? Because he's been where I am now.
You're saying they don't want to be selling drugs, standing
they don't. They want an alternative. They want a way out. But one thing, you have to see where it came from. Sometimes you're not even going to take all the advice when it comes verbally. If I see you living life, now I can see how to do it. I could bring you fish. But if I teach you how to fish, I won't have, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, see, Tracy, that's where clergy on patrol is great, but he's pretty much clergy on patrol every day, it seems
every
like.
Every day. but the difference is, this is his ministry, that is his calling, that is his purpose. What we are doing with clergy on patrol is just involving some of the people who are involved with
right.
MOG, WOG, and getting them, in addition to other clergy mm-hmm. members, out into the community, along with RPD, so the police officers can get to know the residents who are there. They can know this is Mrs. Dawson. They can know this is Mr. Jones. Familiarize themselves mm-hmm. with the makeup of the community, and in doing so, like Dee will reference people who want a different life. That's why we give them the materials on programs that the city sponsors that will help them change their life, like Operation Transformation or the Workforce Development Program. And if they find themselves also in a situation that could be life-threatening, we have Ray Maioli's with other workers of his who can help point them in the proper direction what they should do to remove themselves out of that situation.
If they want it, Ray. I mean, and or if they're willing to have the help. And as D. Will is saying here, he doesn't believe, he thinks some of the stereotype that we may have not growing up on the streets is that, well, you know, they don't know or they don't want any other outcome.
Right.
And D. Will is saying they don't want to be standing on the corner selling drugs. They want another way. Mm-hmm. But when you meet people, clergy on patrol or elsewhere, and you're concerned about them, do they have to at least embrace what you're willing to offer in, to some degree?
We can offer it to them till they're blue in their face and continue offering it every day.
Right.
And it's only up to them until they either hit rock bottom or someone says something that triggers or it's a life-altering experience. That's when change will happen.
Okay, well,
they got to want it. They got to want it.
And so D. Will, your story then. You said you've done much worse than what you've seen in some of those neighborhoods when you were growing up. Let's talk a little bit about your background, if you're willing to share it. You grew up where?
I grew up in the 19th
Ward. Okay.
On the west side, Wellington Avenue.
Okay. How did you end up doing some of the things that you wish you hadn't done?
It's kind
of
weird because I grew up in a very stable home. Mother and father went to private schools, Nazareth Hall, Bishop Kearney. Then I got kicked out. I think it was, you know, media. Media plays a very big part of what goes on in our communities. You know, what people see on TV, to movies, to the music. It's like a facade of life. It's like a fantasy world that people see and they get all gassed up like, oh, I could live like that. You know, the love of money, you know what I mean? And even for me, like, it was weird because my family had money. So that wasn't my case. It was the lifestyle that was it looks very pleasurable, you know what I'm saying? So one day I must have just went, my mom always used to tell me, make sure you stay in this 3-block radius. So it's like, you know, in between Trafalgar, Melrose, and whatever. I ventured down to Sawyer Street, and I ran into a couple of kids, and they were selling crack. So
how old were you?
I was about 17, and I just seen them having fun and selling crack at the same time. There wasn't no life dangering situations going on. They're just selling drugs and they're counting money and they're buying their own food. We used to call them $1 million trays. And it's like, this is cool. This is what they rap about. Let me join into it. But it wasn't until I really dived in and really got into the game and then seeing everything that came along with it. And then when I finally hit rock bottom, that's when I was like, yo. Because everybody knows what's good and what's bad. You know, everybody has a conscience. And everybody knows that at the end of the day, this isn't good for me.
What's rock bottom for you?
Rock bottom for me was I ran out of money. Like, ran all the way out of money. I was selling pounds of weed in East Rochester on Probert Street. You know, I was okay. But I had a foundation, which my parents instilled in me. Like, I knew about God and everything. But I ended up growing up atheist because of the private school I was in. They were saying one thing and living another.
It looked hypocritical to you?
It was very hypocritical. It was very hypocritical. So I was like, yo, God isn't real. God isn't real. So I'm just going to fall all the way back from this. But my mom used to call me up every Sunday morning. Like, you coming to church? I'm not coming to church. I got money. Like, I don't need God. This is a God right here. And I must have went to Miami, came back. My landlord stole all of my weed, so all of my, you know, my re-up money.
And like you were how old at this point?
I was 19.
19.
It's not like I could call the cops. But like, yeah, he stole all my weed and my re-up money.
Yeah, but D-Will, people do call when they get their weed stolen. I'm just like,
oh, they do? Yeah. That's crazy.
And their money.
They call.
And their money.
Oh, my God. I never thought that way. I was not going to put myself in that situation. But, you know, I hit rock bottom. I had to move back in with my mom. And it comes to a point of life when you're actually tired.
Did she know that you've been doing that?
Yeah. Yeah. She was very upset. She used to talk to me and be like, you know, you could go to jail. You know, you can die. And then I was like, yeah, you know, I also can't. You know, there's could level it out. I got shot before and I didn't die. So I was like, hey, it's okay.
You got shot?
Yeah. I got shot on Thurston and Milton at 10 o'clock in the morning.
10 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah, who's up shooting people that early?
Over one of your own deals?
Nah, I was over. I used to steal motorcycles for fun. I stole the wrong motorcycle that day.
All right, Evan, but if I could just tie it into something, listen to what he said. He came from a stable home life, parents who loved him,
yes,
well-to-do, had money. What you will find, I think, going back to stereotypes, unfortunately, people will have a stereotype of what the streets or who the streets are made up of. And I think sometimes people will have this misconception and label everybody like that.
Right.
And one thing, too, that's good is getting officers who are not necessarily from the city, from the hood, if you will, from the street, giving them a chance to walk out in the community. They get to learn, okay, these are the people who indulge in this. This is a senior who lives here, who's been here 50 years, just a good person trying to exist. It allows them to understand the makeup of the community. And with that, it with help from the clergy, it allows them to understand truly, block by block, what the neighborhoods are like. Mm-hmm. Because people tend to think of it typically just as the streets, but they're neighborhoods where you may have a judge living here, you may have a steel worker living here, somebody who works at Strong here, but they truly get to understand there are all types of people who live in the streets, mm-hmm. on the hood, and it helps them to know this is the person I could go to and talk to offline to help with a case that may have happened, like with the shooting at 10 o'clock in the morning, right. of D-Well. And so it is a benefit.
Absolutely. And I also think that it humanizes everybody on all sides of mm-hmm. this. And I say that because, and D. Will in a minute, I'm sure, will tell me exactly what, when you're on the street, quote unquote, what people think of police sometimes. Mm-hmm. And so sometimes there's an assumption that police don't think of people who live on the street, who deal as human beings, unfairly, for the most part. And there are times where people who live on the street, work there, think of police as not human, not caring about them, mm-hmm. Again, mostly unfairly. And so, D-Well, how do we get to a point now where everyone is sort of humanized, where people are looking at each other in ways that aren't, you know, one side versus another? Did you see that?
This is exactly where clergy and patrol comes in, because there all will be a relationship will always be based off of assumptions if there's no communication at all.
Mm-hmm.
If there's no communication at all. I was just at Hood Prayer last week, and the officers roll up. This is the thing that I love about clergy and patrol is that it's confirmation to what I've been thinking for a long time. And because every time the police officers pull up to Hood Prayer and the guy's on the corner, they never run anymore. They actually run towards me because they're like, oh, D-Will's going to protect us from the police. And it's like, ah. And it's like, yo, y'all don't even got to be like that. The officers will come out and actually have a conversation with them. Yo, let me see your ID and show you this is proper procedure. We want to make sure none of you got warrants. And then I get to explain to them, like, yo, man, listen, when you commit a crime, you're a part of a virus. You know what? A part of a virus. Why you're a part of a virus? Because this community is a body. And we have to, you got to be rid, you know, you got to be rid of, or the whole community becomes sick. And you also have to know that this officer, this is his job. This is his job to keep the body clean. You know what I'm saying? So, and once they get this understanding, and now it's more than just, then it goes beyond the, this is my job and this is what I do as a drug dealer. No, what's your name? What's your background? Mm-hmm. Where did you go to school? You know, what do you like to do? Oh, you can hoop? Oh, I can hoop too. You want to play basketball against each other? Then it becomes a relationship to where first name basis, not nicknames. And you know what I'm saying? And that's when it becomes more humanized instead of us versus them. Because that's how it was. It was always us versus them. And I think it was ever since, like, the D.A.R.E. program disappeared. This is like the new D.A.R.E. program, you know, where the cops become, they could come talk to the kids. The cops could come talk to the people. I remember when I was young, I wanted to become an officer because of the D.A.R.E. program. The cops coming into the school, they're bringing the dog, the fake drugs and all that. I'm like, oh, I want to be a cop. Let me touch your handcuffs, you know? But now you get that encounter with the police again where it's not like, oh, I come here to take you or I come here to do this or that. But no, I come here to know who you are.
And I think Commander Morabito, I don't know if you saw the story that ran on Channel 13. It profiled the walk that we did in the North Goodman area, and he and Pastor Bernice Green were walking, and they had a wonderful time. If you could share how you walked on a guy and he didn't run from your perspective.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting, which goes to Pastor Dewell here, too, is on the reverse side, there's stereotypes of the police officers. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. We have many, many, many police officers, not just in RPD, but around, that are men of, and women of faith. Mm-hmm. We have a lot of that. We have people that are involved in community events all the time, so sometimes it helps break down the stereotype on the opposite side. And I went to Jefferson High School. I grew up three blocks from here, so... You know, you may not know that, and but if you get an opportunity to talk to somebody and you talk to them for 5 minutes, you find out that you might have went to school with one of their family members, a friend or something like that. So it breaks down that stereotype, too. And sometimes Pastor Green mm-hmm. could be that conduit for the person not running from me mm-hmm. because they see the officer walking up, and now I'm walking up with the pastor and about four or five other folks, and they're like, what's going on here? And should I run or should I stay?
Right.
And they hang around, and you actually stop and talk to them for 5 minutes. And don't get me wrong, if they had a warrant, or they broke the law, I'm going to do my job, like Dewell says. I'm going to do my job, but there's ways of doing it. And oftentimes, the best officers, and I say this quite frequently, you have to have good common sense, you have to be able to talk to people. Those are the two big important things. And this clergy on patrol thing helps us break some of that stereotypes, helps us have a little more of an introduction to folks on a lower level. And to the DARE program, the need for us to talk to the kids when they're young is way more important than waiting till they're 16 or 17 and then approach them and try and get an impression, because they've already had their television impression, mm-hmm. their family member telling them about the police or whatever. So for us, getting their buy-in and getting that interaction at a young age is very, very important.
Yeah, that's why this youth walk is important, because we're starting to bring the youth, mm-hmm. the Mayor's Youth Advisory Council, Youth Voice One Vision, to come and walk with the clergy and law enforcement at a young age, to start creating young leaders to really take action.
All right, so how do they come and walk with you?
Well, they're going to come on June 29th, and they're going to organize Monday, and they're going to organize all the events 4:30 to 7:30, but the youth advisors and the youth leaders will be walking concurrently while that's going on with clergy and the law enforcement. You know, I go back to the 80s. You know, we had police athletic leagues, mm-hmm. And I was a member of that where... You know, I worked with a lieutenant who was our softball coach. And knowing who that person is now, we still have a relationship. And not knowing what he just said, I went to Jefferson High School. Well, I know somebody named Joe Morabito, who I went to high school with. Might be the family.
I'm assuming I'm the same one. There was only one there.
I'm thinking he's a little younger than you. just a tad. Just a tad.
But I tried.
Back then in the neighborhood, we all went to the same church on Sunday.
Right.
We all knew the same cops in the area. So it was a bond that we all had. Officer Friendly was a very familiar face. Whoever was in the McGruff uniform, we kind of always tried to figure out who that was in the crime dog. You know, so just building those relationships at a young age is very important for community, for the residents, for the neighborhoods, and especially for like even the R centers, which are like a staple of the neighborhood, where everybody comes for recreation, you know, computers and reading and family unity. That's where everybody comes. But after it closes at 5 o'clock or 9 o'clock, everybody just is on their own. Mm-hmm. You know, we did outreach this week, and we asked some young people and say, how do you feel about police? Well, I don't trust them. Well, who do you call when you get shot or stabbed? I'm going to call the police.
Right.
So, all right, they're good enough to call when you're hurt, but that's it. Other than that, I don't trust you. So that's hypocritical.
Right. Yeah. I also think, too, that that's often the knee-jerk response. People say they don't trust us, because mm-hmm. I think they really do. Mm-hmm. And I think, for the most part, not everyone. And I also think that they realize that if I really have a problem, that's who I call. You know, I mean, when we come, the problem is with the connection with the law enforcement is sometimes we're arresting one of their relatives. Mm-hmm. We're meeting them at their worst moment. Violence in the house, someone injured, someone shot. We're meeting them at a bad spot. I always joke with my fireman friends is, you know, nobody gets mad at the firemen because they come there to put out the fire and try and rescue you. Mm-hmm. You know, sometimes we are arresting a family member or a loved one, so it's easy for them to get that negative impression of us. So it's real important how we interact and still do our job.
Right.
That's the difficult part, and that's really tough, especially for young officers, to get that get that savvy and get that ability to talk with folks. And you end up getting a street reputation. Right. Most of the officers get some kind of a nickname from the folks that live in the neighborhood. Oh, yeah, they'll call them something.
Nicknames.
Yeah. Everybody has a nickname.
I don't know if we want to know a few.
Yeah, some I can't repeat here, but they obtain nicknames. And that's some of the interaction, because oftentimes the folks that we deal with on the street are known as a nickname.
Right.
D. Will uses a nickname, you know, so that's just the way it is.
Let me also say, before we get to, and I'm way late for a break here, but let me say, especially to Commander Morabito, it is easier to sit in a talk show studio and say that communication by police, especially in those very difficult moments where you may have to arrest someone, their family is surrounding you, yelling at you, they're frustrated, they don't know why, you're a villain to them at that moment. And being able to communicate effectively with them, it's easy to sit in the studio and say, well, that's the moment you got to do it, as opposed to being in that moment and doing it.
Yeah.
And I would just want to say, from my own perspective, it's so much easier for me to sit here with a microphone than to do what you do. And I appreciate you recognizing the value in that moment of being able to do it and carrying it out there, because that has to be very, very difficult.
Yeah. But Evan, if I could just jump in and just say this one part. What helps, we all recognize that the RPD, first of all, they are some of the hardest working men and women in our law enforcement here in the city. But they are asked to do a very difficult job. But we have found that when they've had an opportunity to walk the blocks, as they have been doing with the reorg, get to know the people, if for some reason, let's say they go to D. Will's home for an incident, you know, coming in, I think it will bring across, okay, that's Commander Morabito. He's a good guy. We know he's just doing his job. He has to do what he has to do, but we're not upset. I think by them being familiar with the particular officer, it definitely will help in that time. And we've gotten feedback like that from people on the street and even from some officers, that if they hadn't have walked, if they didn't take part in a youth activity, things would have been handled a little bit differently.
Yeah. Commander?
Yeah, it's very important for us, and we train our officers, especially our young officers. You know, there's that how you're perceived and how you de-escalate that situation. Because when you're in the heat of the moment, obviously we have a lot of safety concerns. We have to do our job, as distasteful as it might be. But we also work really hard to make sure officers realize that we're de-escalating. We're going to try and explain as much as we can. I mean, sometimes you're getting yelled at by 20 people, and you can't take 5 seconds to explain to anybody because you just don't have that kind of time because of what's going on. But when we do, and when we have the ability to go over and talk to somebody after and say, hey, just so you know, this is what happened. That young man there that we just had arrest and tackled him in the middle of the street and you all saw it, well, he just robbed somebody 2 blocks over. They didn't know, you know, they may not know that. So some of that de-escalation and that information, that communication goes a long way. Takes that de-escalation right to the bottom.
You're hearing from Commander Joseph Morabito of the Rochester Police Department, Tracy Miller with the City of Rochester, Ray Mayolise, who is the manager of Youth Outreach and Violence Prevention, and David D. Will Williams, the CEO and co-founder of MOG, the Man of God Movement. We're going to get a short break. If you want to call the program, we're talking about clergy on patrol and the city's efforts to improve police community relations that you've been hearing about this hour. We want to get your take, and you can call the program toll-free, 844-295-TALK, 844-295-8255, or 263-WXXI, 263-9994. Your phone call is right after this break on Connections. And coming up in our second hour, we're going to talk about Sentry Safe, a company that was founded in 1930 in Pittsford. And you might have heard the news this week that 350 jobs will be going to Wisconsin and Mexico. The company was sold just a year ago to Master Lock. And apparently the owners thought they had a promise that the jobs would stay. The jobs will be gone. We'll talk to the former CEO. He'll tell us about the promise that he felt was broken this week. And we'll get your take on the community losing this company. That's next hour. Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. All of a sudden, the phone has just lit up, and let's go to the phones now. This is Sahira in Rochester. Go ahead.
Hi, Evan.
Hi.
I just have a question about how would I go about getting clergy on patrol in my neighborhood?
It's a good question. How do you go about getting clergy on patrol in her neighborhood?
You could give me a call, please, at 428-7045.
Do it again. Say it again.
428-7045, and I will work with you and get some information and talk to you about it.
cool, okay, because I really just support this program. I feel like it's really good to have this kind of relationship between the community and police officers. It could help a lot.
Well, that's,
thank you.
Yes.
Oh, no problem. Hopefully you could join us this coming Monday. We would love to have you come out and take part. We're just asking the community to come out. And one part we didn't mention, we are providing a wonderful meal for the young people. We have hot dogs, hamburgers, Spanish rice, some safe drinks for the kids, and some water. So it's going to be good.
All right. So the Clergy on Patrol Youth Walk this coming Monday, as they really kind of relaunch this program, Monday, June 29th. And the event at the Avenue D R Center, which is at 200 Avenue D, is from 4:30 to 7:30.
Correct.
Is that right? And does that follow the walk, or is that all sort of at the same time?
It's all at the same time. Okay. And if it doesn't, we say 7:30 is an end time. But typically, we're having a good time, so we stay longer, so we won't shut it down right at 7:30.
Very good. Commander?
Yes, Sierra, I'm just curious what neighborhood you live in, because we may or may not have already been there. I'm just curious.
Oh, we lost the caller. I'm sorry.
Oh.
Sorry.
It's my fault. But
no problem.
Sierra, if you're hearing Commander, that's a good question, because I think with the program starting this past fall, you've been to a number of neighborhoods. It doesn't mean you wouldn't go back.
Absolutely.
Right. So if you want to get in touch with Tracy, that's how you do it. Let's get back to the phones. This is Brian in Rochester. Go ahead, Brian.
Yes, hello. A lot of times when I hear these programs, I hear a comment that I never quite understand the basis for it. I'm a military veteran. I lived all over the world, literally. I've been in some very difficult situations. And one of the things that I guess I've learned is that if at some point during my military career, or anyone else's for that matter, if it becomes a job that you feel that you can no longer do, if it becomes something that you're bringing home with you more than you should, then maybe it's time to walk away. And I heard a comment said earlier that, I know this is about the neighborhood, you know, interaction that's going on, but I heard a comment that was made that someone said they do a very difficult job. Well, it's a job they volunteer for, that police volunteer for, just like me as a military. I volunteer for it. And at one point, or if at some point it becomes too difficult of a job for me, then it's time for me to walk away, as opposed to do something that's going to be harmful to myself, to others, civilians, and to those who are in my group, my battalion, you know, what have you. I'm just wondering, is that ever message ever given to young officers, older officers, that, you know, the nature of the job that you signed up for, you knew it was a difficult job when you signed up for it, and if it's something that's overwhelming for you, it's time to walk away.
Commander Morbido?
Yeah, I mean, it's a pretty broad question, but just generally, anyone that comes on the job, or any job they have, if it comes a point in time where it's just too difficult for them to do, we have a lot of things in place that if we get officers that have issues, we have employee assistance programs and things that can happen if it's become that stressful. Obviously, we monitor it on a close basis with our supervision and other officers. That's not normally the case. I don't think you get a whole lot of folks on the police department. I mean, guys that join and gals that join our police department want to be here for a long time, you know, obviously minimum of 20 years, and they dedicate their whole lives to it. So it's not a normal occurrence, but it is something obviously we keep an eye on and monitor. If someone doesn't want to be here anymore, I mean, there's nothing keeping them here if they really don't want to be. We don't see that very often.
Yeah, Brian, I'm a former vet myself, and I just want to thank you for serving our country.
Yeah.
You're welcome. But like I said, I just don't understand the whole comment of they do a difficult job. Many of us do a difficult job when we sign up.
Well, Brian, stand in line, because I was the one who made that comment, and I do want to explain a little bit more here. Every job you can imagine has difficult components. I think police work, when I said those moments are difficult, let me be very specific. I have been down there, you know, reporting on scenes. It may be 12:30 in the morning, and there may be a police presence, and there are some questions. People on the street don't exactly know what's going on. You may have 25 people standing around watching, saying, "What's going on?" All of a sudden, police come out of a building, and they've got somebody arrested. And all of a sudden, you've got 25 people shouting, "What are you doing? Look, I'm not going to perfectly encapsulate what they say, but they're saying, you can't do that. You can't, you know, and all of a sudden they're angry with the police. I think that's what Commander Moore being, and I'm not saying that's every day. I'm not saying that's every neighborhood, and hopefully it doesn't happen very often, but we've seen it. And what I'm saying is this. In my job as a talk show host, I'm never in that position. I have difficult parts of my job. They are not like that. And it takes an important skill set to handle that in a way that won't take that one arrest and turn a bunch of people on that street, whether it's family, friends, neighbors, into thinking it's us versus them and they are against us. Does that make sense, Brian?
Okay, I fully understand that, and I don't have a overall disregard for police. My best man is a police officer. I know several. I used to train with police officers. I know several. I know some of those in the RPD, so I don't have a overall disregard for the RPD or police in general. But as I said, having lived in several different places, and to hear every time I hear a conversation regarding law enforcement, I hear this comment, they do a very difficult job. Well, if those who volunteered, who signed up for law enforcement, if that difficult, quote-unquote, difficult job is too difficult for them, where they are either putting themselves, their fellow law enforcement officers, or civilians in danger because they can't handle the difficulty of the job, well, then, just like the military, or just like many other difficult jobs, teachers, whatever, what have you, it's time maybe to consider walking away as opposed to using the fact that we do a difficult job.
I'm with you.
I
think you're right. Brian, I think you're right. And I don't know if anybody would disagree with that, and I really do appreciate the phone call. I think that's right. I think any job that you feel like is overwhelming, you shouldn't do. I think Commander Morabito, to Brian's point there, I think he is right that you did sign up for a job that does have a high level of responsibility that you can handle those situations. I think we're just trying to talk in human terms about how to do it the best way.
Right, and I think that's what he's getting at, because, I mean, we talk about difficult jobs, and everybody has a difficult job because that means you have to go to, it's why it's a job. But the difference is law enforcement and police officers go and see and do things that most people don't do. And you can go from sitting down having your lunch to 2 seconds later somebody shooting at you, or you're chasing something down the street, or you're going to a home where a child was beaten. That's the difference between when folks say we do a difficult job. And not to lessen anybody else's job, but that is a lot of
Absolutely. Stress.
And I think that's what he was getting at, if it gets to be tough on you.
Exactly. And I don't disagree with him, because Brian would probably say, you're right. You may be having a cup of coffee and all of a sudden you are on a foot chase. Wow, what a difference. But if you can't do it properly, you still shouldn't do it. And we do need the best people doing it properly. Brian is right about that.
Agreed.
We're simply saying, with clergy on patrol and these kind of issues, the more the people on that street know Commander Morabito, the more they're going to say, wow, he's making an arrest. I don't like this, but I don't know what happened. Maybe I can talk to him sometime. Maybe I can find out, as opposed to, I don't know who that is, but he's the enemy.
Exactly.
Is that
and that's some of where our smaller beats and our reorganization and our new model that we're in, or our new old model, if you will do that, because sometimes the officers had a large area to worry about. Now with the smaller area, we're encouraging that personal relationship where they'll feel comfortable that after that officer makes the arrest, I know I can go up and talk to him a couple minutes later and they'll know me and they'll speak to me. That's kind of what I talk about, some of the de-escalation as well. That's part of it, just explaining. And the other thing people got to remember is a lot of times we can't discuss why we're arresting somebody. There's legal issues, there's personal issues.
But there's a human touch that you could say to somebody, I wish I could tell you more. Right now, I want you to trust me. I want to keep you safe. I want to keep everyone safe. I do care about you. As opposed to just get out of my face, I'm out of here.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
And that's
there is a difference.
And that's how I talk to the
yes.
How we handle that piece is important, because you're still doing the same thing, but you just say it in a different way.
Absolutely. Mary has been waiting to jump in. Go ahead, Mary.
Yes, good morning, or I guess it's afternoon.
Yes.
I've been listening to your program briefly, and I'm wondering how the new patrols differ from the PACTAC that I was familiar with. Can you explain that?
Well, there are different programs. There is the PACTAC program, where residents from the community walk their particular area. But with clergy on patrol, one time we could be walking in the northwest, another time we could be walking in the northeast in particular areas that have been suggested to us by different people. So that pretty much is the difference, because we're teaming up the police officers and the clergy who are from that community in efforts, again, and to rebuild the bridge between the residents and the RPD.
Okay, but what I'm wondering is, was there a reason you did not use the PACTEC organization and just add the clergy to it?
Well, I can probably answer that a little bit. The clergy piece, the clergy and patrol piece, is using our faith-based community to expand our outreach. PACTEC is another form of our outreach to the community, the police and citizens together against crime. That's kind of what it stands for. So our PACTEC is an ongoing process, and we're actually trying our best to reinvigorate it as much as we can to get even more folks involved. So it's just another one of the many facets we do to do community outreach. You see a lot of officers on walking beach. You'll see a lot of different things going on. They're all different parts of the outreach. The clergy piece is not eliminating the PACTEC piece, if you will. It's just a different audience and a different approach. And again, bringing in a very large congregation of folks that we can do in a neighborhood to outreach.
But I'm not debating what you're doing. I just think that had they ever thought of adding some of the clergy to the PACTEC? Because, you know, when the Martin Luther King, when they were doing all that down, the clergy were part of that.
Yeah.
It wasn't a separate group. They were all part of it.
Yeah. Well, the difference,
you incorporate the clergy with the things that are going on, which I think sound excellent. But, I mean, some of us have been asking for the foot patrols for a very long time, and also for bicycle patrols. And in the 19th Ward, I have not seen this. Maybe I don't look out the right time.
Well, let me say this.
Yeah,
sure. The mayor specifically wanted the RPD and the clergy to walk in particular areas, particular hot spots that perhaps some members of PACTEC would feel uncomfortable walking in. There were many clergy who have asked the mayor, how can they help? And so she and the chief came together and said, listen, what we're trying to do, we're trying to make the street safe for everyone. We are also trying to make sure that everyone who wants to get a GED, job training, they have that opportunity as well. So let's merge these different things, put them together so we could go out into the community utilizing people who know the community best, the clergy, coupled with the RPD who have to work in these areas to help make the community better for everyone.
All right, let me grab one more quick phone call. Edward, try to keep it brief. Go ahead, Edward.
Hi, Evan. So, all right, I served in the Navy during the time when they were reducing the size of the fleet. So there were lots of reasons for people to be kicked out, and it happened all the time. My question is, from my military experience and then, as a result, judging paramilitary organizations, what is the kind of training and or support that's given to officers when they're, as has been said often in this, under stress? Because in the Navy, I recognize that the clergy speaking with an officer about that was really one of the few ways that you could get support on base for emotional issues. You know, it was not treated as though it was something excessive, acceptable and open with the chain of command. It was very easy to feel like an outsider when you had a problem that you needed to talk about. I wonder whether or not there's a similar scenario going on with our police force, and what is the command of the police force willing to do to address these, instances where officers are occasionally losing their cool in instances where they have to have it.
Edward, and thanks for the call. Yeah, thank you, Edward. We're down to about our last 90 seconds, so go ahead, gentlemen.
Just real quickly, I can say that there's a lot of things from starting when the officers are hired and in the academy where there's training about dealing with stressors and different issues that may come about, how they want to handle a situation the proper way. We have a number of things, and we care very deeply about our officers. And part of my job in the command of the police department is to ensure that our officers' health and well-being is paramount. Our safety and the safety of the community are the two main things. So, you know, whether it be physical safety or part of the mental health side of things, we are very attuned to that. We have programs, and we have staff on hand if there's any stress that can address things immediately. So any of that stuff is taken care of, their well-being.
D. Will, if in about 20 seconds, if people see clergy on patrol, whether it's Monday or other days, you want them to come out and say hello, walk with you?
Yes, of course. They need to. That's what the community needs, man. Community needs a party. A party full of positivity with police.
Well, you know, we're going to see starting Monday, and it is 4:30 to 7:30 is the event, Monday the 29th. That's at the Avenue D Art Center. And Tracy Miller, you want who to come out on Monday?
We want the kids in particular to come, just residents. Come and see what's happening. You'll have a great time.
And Clergy on Patrol, is there a schedule or a way to track it online, Tracy?
Just contact me, and I'll get them in touch.
And go ahead, Ray.
That would be www.cityofrochester.gov/clergyRPD.
ClergyRPD at the cityofrochester.gov website. Ray Mayolis is with the City of Rochester, the manager of Youth Outreach and Violence Prevention. Thank you, Ray.
Thank you, Evan.
Commander Joe Morabito, thank you, Joe. Nice, always nice talking to you, sir.
Same here, my pleasure.
Tracy Miller, City of Rochester. Thank you, Tracy.
Thank you.
D. Will, fascinating story, and good luck with the work that you're doing. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And thanks for all the callers and feedback. Got through as many as we could. We'll talk more about Clergy on Patrol as the program continues. Short break. We're talking Sentry Safe next.